Toy Power Podcast is a free podcast made possible by the support of our awesome Patreon sponsors. Head to toypowerpodcast.com and see how you can help. Episode 62 of the Toy Power Podcast. A big hello to you. Welcome once again to the world's greatest Toy Power Podcast, named Toy Power Podcast. Sorry, joining me tonight is everyone's favourite person named Ben. It is Ben. How you doing, dude?
G'day. Welcome. Great to be here.
And now, as everyone can see, because this is a podcast, at the top of the table, we're joined by Frank, who is hosting us in his lovely second-rate collection room. How you going, Frank?
Yeah, good, mate. It needs a bit of work, you're right, but good to be here.
And tying everything together, as always, Darren, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you very much, everyone. It's great to be here with you, and gee, Trent, you've changed a lot.
I certainly have. I found a cream that helps you grow a personality. I am Davey Damage. It's a pleasure to be with you, filling in for Trent, who has been banished for one complete episode due to his poor performance on the previous episode.
Exactly right. Look, I think we'll just jump straight into it. This episode is basically a bit of toy news. There's been a lot happening in toys right around the world over the last week. And we're going to kick it off with a favourite property of ours that we always seem to find a way to talk about. Master of the Universe. Ben, what's been going on there?
Yeah, so Motu dropped some teaser pics earlier in the week. One of them was the back, sort of a gun, and what looked like the back of a seat. And it didn't take us long as Motu gurus to quickly work out that's a Stridor we're looking at. And lo and behold, the next day we actually saw a full-blown picture, including the packaging of Stridor coming out from Super 7, which is pretty exciting. It will cost $60 and is about to go up for pre-order. Pics and final production and packaging are all out there for you to check out. Look for this to be a straight repaint of Mattel's Nightstalker, with the same helmet as the Four Horsemen sculpted for the Nightstalker, rather than being a version of the original Stridor helmet. You know, there's lots of opinions going around the internet. End of the day, I am going to buy this, but I'm not 1,000% happy with its execution. Enough said.
I think it looks better without the helmet, as has been discussed with in other areas where the helmet was clearly designed for the Night Stalker, like the evil repaint. And yet, when you look at the original Stridor, it's got a helmet that is a very different design and more heroic looking.
Yeah.
They're saying $60 US. What does that mean by the time it gets here?
Don't ask us. As I already shot around the room, Darren, Trent and myself will probably jump in or board. I mean, you're welcome to jump on board to Davey and Trent, but Frank. But we're just going to try and bundle order so that we can save on some shipping.
For sure.
But it's still, that's a lot of coin.
Yeah,
you know? It is a lot of coin.
Order.
It's a very cool idea and item, and I've been waiting for a Stridor since Nightstalker was announced. I guess Stridor was the one I had in my vintage toy collection as a child, so I probably have a stronger, tie to Stridor. Like Ben has said and alluded to, I'm one of the disappointed people in the fan community about the helmet, and I'm also surprised. I seem to remember Scott Knightley, the former brand manager for Master Universe Classics when it was over at Maddie, saying that originally they had planned a longer final year Masters of the Universe Classics line with the Collector's Choice, and that Stridor was originally planned as well as Nightstalker at a different point in the year. And the way he seemed to talk about it was that it had already been tooled, so I would have thought there would have been a Stridor helmet out there somewhere.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. So there is now some news from the Mythic Legions line, of course, sculpted by the Four Horsemen. They're headed to PowerCon this year. You may recall we've seen earlier some like a repainted barbarian called Adamon in very sort of He-Man colours, and a skeleton type warrior called Keltis, looking suspiciously like Skeletor. This year they've got what looks to be a man-shaped tiger, if you will, in suspiciously looking battle cat colors. He looks actually really good.
He's freaking awesome.
He's a green figure with the yellow sort of stripes and just his red armor and a very sort of He-Man-esque kind of sword.
Let
to go
me
with.
Guess, it's called Combat Cat.
Close. It is called Cowrus. they've also got a repaint of a figure. I think they've already done, but it's a female orc type villain in Evil Lyn colors called, wait for it, Melina the Malevolent. I'm not going to say that three times fast. And look, they look amazing, considering one of them is just a straight up repaint, but the other one is, it's a unique figure. You know, we're all used to seeing knights in shining armor and stuff. This guy's that, but he's got a giant cat's head that looks pretty much like Cringer. So yeah, they will be available at PowerCon and then hopefully in the Four Horsemen store after the release. Darren, I think we've got some Star Wars news to talk about.
We have, and we have confirmation that Jabba's sail barge is a go. So I think Brett G wanted an update on Jabba's sail barge, which has sold enough pre-orders for it to go through, and just wanted to give Trent a shout out. I'm sure he would if he was here, but he called it on a previous episode.
It would make bank. Yeah.
Yeah, that it would make bank quite easily. And yeah, Trent being the numbers man accountant that he is, was right on the money.
Yeah, so this was the I don't want to say Kickstarter, but it was this one there. Hasbro said, look, we're going to put this out there. We want backers to fund it because it is such a massive scale toy with the old in scale with the Kenner stuff. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how hard this is to get on the secondary market. Oh, and
if you can
afford to ship it to anywhere outside of the US, really.
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating one. Obviously, it's going to be limited in number. It's, you know, the sales mechanism, though, opens the doors to other toy companies and other lines doing similar things. So, yeah, I guess it's a case of watch this space to see what other pre-order Kickstarter-type options there are down the track. Congratulations to all the Star Wars fans that jumped on.
Got it there.
I think, you got an awesome toy made that I imagine you're all going to love.
As a skeptic, guys, I'll put it to you and just ask, how do you feel about the likes of Disney, who, you know, the Star Wars umbrella that exists?
Mm.
How do you feel like things at that level wanting people to help get stuff off the ground? Like, do you think it's a little bit arrogant of someone at that size?
Frank called it that way as
initially
well.
At the time when the news broke, I was like, this is done as much as it's licensed by Disney. This was put out by Hasbro. And I'm like, you are arguably the biggest toy manufacturer in the world right now, and you're asking us to fund your project. I went, hang on, if you can't afford to do it, and you're Hasbro, what's going on?
It's well, the way,
like
the
that's way, how I read it.
Well, the way I even the way I'm reading it, hearing it like from you guys, it's basically like Macca's coming and go, hey, give us $10. We want to make this new burger. It's pretty good, but first you have to give
you
us
have
the
to
money.
Pay the money up front. Yeah,
it's like no. You do that, and then we'll buy it.
I have sort of come around a little bit, and it's mainly because of the scale of this thing. It is, what, it's 4 feet long or something? Like, it's actually in scale with the old Kenner Star Wars figures, but it's Jabba's sail barge that can take, you know, 15, 20 figures. It's huge. And that's the only thing where I go, okay, fair enough, because they would have done the math to say, right, that's an expensive thing for them to buy into just to watch it clog up store shelves and never get sold. But even still,
they didn't want it to become a Megablocks Technodrome.
Correct. Exactly.
That's the other thing. I don't think it'll ever go to shop. I don't think it'll ever go to retail. It's pretty much like... I don't know, the numbers are just pulling a number out of the air. We're going to make 5,000 units, right? You guys have got to show us that you want it, that we've got 5,000 people that will want it. Those 5,000 people will get one if you get, you know, the numbers correct. And, you know, once the five, you know, now that, yes, it's a green light, you 5,000 people, we need the money, you know, the rest of the money, and we're going to give it to you. And good luck anyone else outside of those 5,000 people, even, you know, seeing one up for sale. But, as you said, someone will sell it, but it'll be interesting. You know, let's say, again, pulling numbers out of the air, let's say you paid $400 for it, right? That person reselling it on the secondary market, it'll be like, now that's going to cost you, you know, $1,200. Yeah. Congratulations, exactly. You know, and no free shipping. Like,
yeah. Look, it's fascinating because I think you've hit the nail on the head. No retailer is going to want to carry this.
That's right.
And that's why Hasbro's offered this mechanism, because they've sensed, you know, there's no point shopping this around to retailers, or perhaps we don't know the internals. Perhaps they did see if a store would go go exclusive on it. Obviously, Frank Mart passed.
No, too rich for me.
Yeah, so psst, yeah, they offered this mechanism.
Hey, nerds, you want to buy some stuff?
Yeah, so it's an interesting space. It's such a big retail or company doing this. So it's nice to see that it got there. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how many are made and how it all pans out. So
and at end of the day, will the fans be happy with it? You know,
yeah,
it's one thing. That's going to be the real litmus test.
Yeah. You know, in collectors' hands, in collectors' reviews, are they going to be blown away by this? Are they going to be just like, yeah, it's cool? Or are they going to be like, this, they didn't do this. They promised us this.
I paid $400.
You know, so that's, I suppose, the next thing.
I suspect they will be happy with it. Just maybe because I've fallen in love a bit with the hype of it, even though I didn't buy in. I can appreciate the idea they're making this thing that's never really existed before, and certainly not in the scale. You know, I guess I'm sort of looking at it from the point of view of in the era of the decline of toys and retailers being a lot more gun-shy about what they'll stock nowadays. I tend to be a bit sympathetic to Hasbro's point of view of trying this mechanism and think, you know, whatever you can do to keep the toys and the nostalgia out there a bit longer is definitely something to consider. I hear what Davey says as well. You know, it did catch me a little off guard too when it was first announced.
Because you're not talking about a startup company here.
No, exactly.
Like, we really need help getting off the ground. It's like, hey, we are pretty much the pinnacle of the whole industry.
Yep.
Give us some money to help us get things going. Grease the wheels, guys.
Yeah, interesting. What else have we got? Darren, I think there was some DC Mattel Universe, Multiverse, leaks. Oh, very, very small, grainy pics that come out.
Certainly were. There's some interesting things that have emerged from those grainy pictures. What looks like a 90s Nightfall Catwoman in the purple suit, which is
my favourite.
Yes. I was just going to say, spot on. I know that's a huge favourite of Ben's, that version of Catwoman, and mine as well. You know, one of my favourites as well, which is great to see.
What favourite Catwoman are you, Davey?
Big pun.
What favourite Catwoman have you got?
Michelle Pfeiffer.
I was going to say, I knew he'd go Michelle Pfeiffer.
The Triple X parody. I don't know. That's just, I'm a big fan.
Halle Berry.
She's a good actor. From her chin to her belly button.
She was great in Storm. She was great in Storm and X-Men.
Sorry, Darren.
No, don't be. Kyle Rayner, Green Lantern, is also been spotted. Impulse and Kingdom Come Superman, which I think is very cool, because this is a nice variant, you know, obscure Elseworld sort of story outside of the mainstream, but it's going to get it, you know, if it's in mainstream retailers, it's going to get a lot more exposure, which is great. And Terry McGinnis Batman Beyond
looks so good.
Does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
With the Lobo being the collecting connect.
Yeah, that's the interesting one. That's the one where people have gone, oh, it's about time we're due for a Lobo. And I was speaking to someone, but his scale has sort of fluctuated over the years. At one point, he was just ridiculously massive,
that was Jose.
Yeah. One of our Patreon chat, we were talking with him, and he showed us examples of very 90s where they were just, the characters were so top heavy and had no ankles and stuff, and now he's been sort of brought back down to a more sort of closer to a Superman physique, without being crazy large. But again, what's interesting, these are sort of leaked pics. This is nothing official that's come out from Mattel. This is just a very small low res pic that we're seeing. So it'd be interesting to see the nice high res stuff when they actually promote it properly.
Absolutely, and we need to give their action figures credit for the scoop.
Who, sorry?
They are action figures.
Oh, that was the name of the where it came from. All right, cool.
I really, really want a Lobo figure in my toy collection. Yes. I've just recently got the Lego version of Lobo, which is pretty cool, the minifigure. I missed out on the DC Superheroes one, which was like a exclusive or something. I don't know, back in the day. It was a larger class or something. Wasn't common. Not that we even got much retail, of those back in the day. But for me, I would love a Lobo figure in my collection. I'm not going to be in it for the collect and connect. I'm not going to collect the characters. So if it does turn out to be collect and collect, and for click whatever,
click
build a figure.
Yeah, build a figure. I'll probably miss out again, which is unfortunate. But it's still cool. He's still cool. Yeah.
Mm.
Right, moving on. Toy companies back from the grave, eh, Davey? Darren. Gosh.
You and your names tonight. Oh, man. You've called me Trent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good job, Frank.
Yeah.
And this is I think wonderful news for those that are wondering what we're talking about. Back in the 1970s, Mego was one of the largest toy companies in the world. Mego worked on a variety of scales from 3.25 inch to 12 inch, but their most popular line was the iconic 8 inch figure. This line of action figures featured a variety of licenses on a fairly uniform buck or body with cloth costumes. And some of those licenses included things like DC, Marvel, Planet of the Apes, Wizard of Oz, and Star Trek in the same style and scale. Founder Marty Abrams may be bringing the toy company back in some form. Not much is known about this yet, but in December of last year, a Facebook page from the Mego Corporation was created. The page is pretty light on information and has a handful of posts from January showing vintage product, but the About tab has the following message: the original Mego Corporation is back. Follow us to stay informed about what's new and cool.
I mean, you combine this with the talk of, you know, that KB Toys is going to potentially try and fill some of the void of Toys R Us falling. I mean, is this like legit? Like, is this what's to stop me going on Facebook, creating a Mego Toys page and writing that sentence? Do you know what I mean?
That's very true.
Like, has this been confirmed anywhere?
Well, even it's, you know, it's not beyond the realm of reality that a bootlegger could even go, all right, here's an old company that now defunct. We're back, guys.
Yeah, we're back the name.
Using the name.
It's really Disney just setting up fake Facebook's going, we need some money to get started. So, you know, we're back, guys.
Disney, we need to get some money for Avengers in case it doesn't perform to expectations.
Yeah, right.
But, that's a very good question. It twigs on the nostalgia strings a bit for me, even though I sort of came, you know, way too late for Mego. I did get the Jukes has a 3.25 inch line as my very first action figure line, and my cousins Mike and Nick were very generous in throwing me some Batman and Superman 8 inch Mego figures that they had, which, by the way, if you're listening, Mike or Nick, I still can't find them. So if you want them back, really, really, really sorry. Don't know what happened to them. But seriously, I might have been too late for it. Might have been too late for that line, but or that company, or for most of that line. But I still have the nostalgia because I remember those hand-me-downs and have that. So I think you're right to question it, Frank. But the romantic in me isn't quite as cynical and is hoping there's something to it.
Oh, look, I hope it's true. It's a crowded space. If they're going back to that 8-inch scale, that's a pretty, with the stuff that Mezco is doing, Bandai, that sort of 7 to 8 inch. Sort of thing is a pretty crowded space with all the sort of high end, even your Hot Toys and these sorts of sideshow. It'll be interesting to see. Like, I hope it comes true, but I guess we'll have to
watch this space. Yeah, all right. Now, just an update on Super 7 about the figures that we all received. So I received my figures, and the things we forgot to mention last time in our sort of review session was how much we love the cross art, like the cross sell art on the back of the packaging. Like, that is just amazing, you know. Massive props to Axel Gomez, Axel what's his name, Darren?
Yeah.
Is he? Did he do the
Axel? Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I'm not quite sure how to do
it. I'm just picturing Axel Rose.
Yeah, so whoever did that cross, our
yeah, Axel, cross. You're a legend. Yeah. As we say in Australia, an absolute dead set legend. And you. I'm letting the bogan in me by saying that, but you are.
And also the club grayscale formation figures all came with mailers, which was something new, which was just helped transport the figures, I suppose, and not get them squashed.
And you got a Fangor figure, is that right?
I got a Fangor figure. He did have a little bit of a loose torso, but aside from that, he was pretty okay.
So wasn't as extreme as Trent.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
Trent's was terrible, unfortunately, and I felt so sorry for him. When I got mine, and they weren't too bad, I felt so glad.
Trent was a bit unlucky.
Yeah. So hopefully that's a bit of a...
Suck it, Trent.
Hopefully that's a bit of a shining light that, you know, some people got some poor quality figures and others got, you know, the
decent, there's some faulty stuff out there.
All right.
I'm still waiting on some of mine, just to give Super 7 an update. But Frank's very generous, generously offered to help me out for those who don't remember... my predicament, you know, they were going to ship them to the post office box, and then decided at the 11th hour that they were too heavy to go to the post office box. I wanted another address, but for logistical reasons I won't go into now, you'll have to listen to the previous episode. That wasn't really possible in my situation, so I want to just give a big public shout out to Frank for helping me out, and to also let him know that they have shipped.
Okay.
They have tracking numbers. So.
Cool.
So hopefully they're not far away. But
I will keep an eye out for them.
He's sat tonight just refreshing the tracking.
That's what I'm doing right now. In case you want
to. Cool. All right. Over to comic book news. So DC has announced a 6-part Masters of the Universe versus DC Injustice series, written by MOTU fan Tim Seeley, who with his brother was responsible for writing the first Masters of the Universe Dark Horse book on the art of MOTU. Freddie E. Williams, too, will once again provide the art, having illustrated the Masters of the Universe versus Thundercats crossover to acclaim for his unique style, also illustrated the Batman TMNT crossover. So we're looking forward to some awesome artwork and hopefully a pretty cool storyline as well. This 6-issue miniseries brings together characters from the popular digital first comic with the Fantastic Heroes and villains from the classic Mattel toy line. DC Entertainment and Mattel are joining forces to bring fans of the Injustice digital first comics and anyone who's ever screamed at the top of their lungs, an epic quest for the fate of the of world Injustice versus He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. Can't frickin' wait.
So how familiar are people with the... Because it's not DC in the, you know, whatever it is, the normal continuity sense. It's the Injustice version. Are people familiar with that? Anyone here?
Just in case. Yes.
Is that the storyline of the first Injustice game?
Pretty much. Cool. Yeah.
When are we going to see He-Man and Skeletor in the fighting game?
That would be pretty awesome.
That would be epic.
Why is it not happening? It's a digital medium. Yep. We've seen Predator and Jason in Mortal Kombat. It's about time we got to fight as He-Man or Skeletor.
We just recently got Ninja Turtles.
We got the Turtles.
Yeah. That's it. That's what I'm saying.
It's the next logical step.
Maybe they need to do a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Maybe they do.
Give us money. Yeah. Nah, look, I think it'll be interesting. In a nutshell, for those who aren't familiar, the Injustice storyline is basically that... Superman gets tricked into killing Lois Lane, and that kind of drives him around the bend, and it's a Superman goes dark kind of story.
He realizes basically he's a god amongst
the heroes. Just goes, I don't need to be played by these rules, I'm just going to rule everybody. And that kind of splits the DC universe. You've got people like Wonder Woman and Flash who sort of side with him, and Batman and the others who are, you know, on the other side of the fence. So where He-Man and these guys sort of come into it is going to be interesting.
I can't wait for this. As everyone here probably imagined, you know, I was really happy to hear this news. You combine what I consider to be the best or my favourite toy-based property with in Masters of the Universe with my favourite comic book-based property in Batman, and it equals one very happy Darren. I think Frank even made the joke that it must have been my birthday.
Oh, I saw it and I just went, like, someone's just gifted Darren this amazing gift. Like, he's got to be stoked for it. Do we know when this is coming out? Any sort of...
June or July.
July. Nice. Cool. Yeah, no, looking forward to that. All right, we've got a bit of gaming news now, and there's a fair bit to cover. We did sort of almost sort of touch on it with Injustice. Injustice 2, the Ultimate Edition, is now out, and that's basically you can get the entire game with all the DLC, including our favorite Ninja Turtles, all in there. It's on all the platforms, on PC even as well. Also includes, you know, other characters like Sub-Zero, Hellboy, you know, no He-Man and Skeletor just yet, but I don't know. Maybe that's Injustice 3.
Maybe if they get enough pledges.
get enough Kickstarter money, exactly. So that's out there. Have a look at that. I've played that to death and back again. It's a very, very crazy good game. Going back a little bit of retro stuff now, the Commodore 64 is getting the mini treatment, similar how we've seen the mini SNES and NES. The Commodore 64 is now that with its whopping, what was it ever it was, 64 kilobytes of RAM that Bill Gates said no one will ever need more RAM than that. Yeah, it's interesting. I remember the name more than I do the games on the Commodore 64, if that makes sense. In terms of my early gaming stuff, I was more a PC guy. And so I remember here... I don't have any memories of holding... I couldn't tell you what a Commodore 64 controller looks like as opposed to a NES controller, for example.
One thing I'm comforted by, I felt like for the last 10 years, just everyone making all this stuff was specifically targeting us and wanting our money, whereas I feel finally they've moved on.
They've picked a different target market. It's not me.
This one comes with a free pair of comfortable thongs.
Slippers.
Yeah.
So a bit like the other ones, it's a smaller scale. The actual console is sort of 50% of the size of the original. Obviously, it connects via HDMI these days. The games included are Iridium, Paradroid, Hawkeye, Nebulous, and Monty Mole, apparently. Mm. Still at the 4:3 ratio, so you're not going to have this horrible stretching on the wide screens. USB ports for your controllers. Apparently, it does also come with a keyboard. The original Commodore 64 had a full keyboard like you see on a computer. But for whatever reason, the keyboard actually doesn't function.
Was there not a cassette tape component?
Yes, there was.
5.5-inch floppy disk.
No, there was actually a cassette tape.
Oh, yeah. There was a cassette drive thing that plugged into it. Okay. I never had one, but some of my friends did. And funnily enough, I'm old enough that the first computer my junior primary school got was a Commodore 64 that toured the classrooms because we didn't have enough to go around for every classroom.
So you were pioneering mobile technology.
Bear in mind, those schools back then were big triangle buildings made out of large stones built by slaves.
That's right. Pretty much I'm that old.
You had to plug it into a cave painting.
But can we go around the room? Is anyone actually going to buy this? Like, honest to God, if it was out on the shelves tomorrow and it was, I don't know, $50, would you buy it, Frank?
I'm going to say no.
Darren?
$50, definitely. Okay. I'm sorely tempted at the price that it is.
All right, fair enough.
No, never.
No. I personally, zero interest.
It's like trying to sell even a younger generation. It's like trying to sell us a wood panel TV. It's like, this is not for us. It never was.
Yeah.
But even I don't feel like... I picture, because my cousin he was obsessed with his Commodore 64. He's now in his mid-40s. And I feel that that's who they're going for.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't think those dudes care anymore. Like, I feel that, well, this is just my understanding, which is somewhat limited. I feel the mid-40s guys that are still interested in gaming are the dudes that are playing Xbox and stuff still. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's fair.
I don't think...
You don't fit in there looking back.
No.
Our generation.
The ones that are obsessed with that kind of thing, I'm sure they've gone down the emulator path because, you know, it's...
You can get access to all the same stuff.
That, and I think that, like, this, you can only go so primitive until you like cap out, like, yeah, you know, a NES and a SNES. It's like that's when the game started getting really good.
That's it. Right?
Yeah.
And people rushing out to get SNESs and things, like, how cool is this? And but then you go like, oh, I'm going to play Pong. You know, oh, cool.
Well, yeah,
you
know? We do the twist. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like, I remember the just the Pong that was just the joystick, yes, that plugged into the,
yeah,
TV.
That's what I had. Like, yeah, we had one of those.
Here's a tiny one, like, yeah, and it's only half right.
We're going to call it Mini.
And yeah, well, on this very topic, one of the other news stories we got here is the Sega Mega Drive, or yeah, Genesis. They're doing the same thing.
I argue that. Sorry to jump in. I argue that because this Sega, yeah, Mega Drive, in different affiliations, has been around for years, and no one has given it the light of day, and all of a sudden Sega are going to,
yeah, because the other one wasn't produced, yeah, by Sega, was it?
I don't think you're going to get any better games than what you can get on the non-Sega
but
version.
See, it almost plays into that, like I remember when the SNES Mini was announced,
mm,
and everyone had that skeptical, oh cool, that's awesome, but then they're like, oh, when are they going to do the 64?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel it's got almost to a comical point where someone's going to be like, oh, when are they going to do the Altair, like the first ever computer? Yeah. It's like, it's only this big. It doesn't do anything. when are they going to bring back floppy disk drives?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's
got to come
a point.
It's
a simple avenue that's just like no thought's gone into it. One thing I did recently see, though, that I thought was an awesome avenue, which would blow my mind, is there's a bit of a boom industry of dudes just around the world buying up all the original coding machines and everything it took to create cartridge-based,
yeah,
both Sega Genesis, so what we had as,
yeah,
the
Mega Drive, yeah,
the Genesis and the Super Nintendo, and they're actually making new properties.
Games, yeah.
Wow.
That would be...
That's
I'd
cool.
love that idea. Like,
yeah,
even if some license holders were to like, hey, here's Guardians of the Galaxy on Super Nintendo.
I think they're actually doing that in Japan. Like, they're actually releasing SNES games still to this day.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not licensed stuff like Guardians
of the
Galaxy.
I would love it to go down the avenue.
There's options there, definitely.
I know Disney aren't a company that can afford to do big ideas.
Yeah,
as
they need a Kickstarter, wouldn't they?
But no, that's something that I think is an avenue that would be fantastic for them to go down, because I know a guy that would just buy any crap that comes on Super Nintendo.
Exactly right. So in the case of the Mega Drive one, at this point it's only for markets in Japan, is what they're saying. They've said, oh, it, in
are they,
theory,
is it, are they calling it Genesis or
I think so, because we know it as the Mega Drive.
It's the
because there's two names, one that's sort of almost exclusively used in sort of our half of the world,
yeah,
whereas everywhere else knows it as,
well, the US was Genesis.
So yeah, it'll be interesting. They haven't announced any details on the games included. You'd imagine it's, you know, sort of Alex Kidd and Sonic and these sort of things.
The iconic ones.
So we'll have to see what comes of that.
Next, the companies be like, oh, we're re-releasing LaserDisc but mini ones. So they're just the size of a CD, but you still got to flip them over.
Black
mini,
so retro.
I want them to release just the original Game Boy as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Doesn't have to be mini, just charge me $50 for one.
Yep, we'd probably buy it. all right, on the topic of video games still, Darren, there's some news centered around old school King Kong.
There is. So for those that may remember the 2007 documentary, The King of Kong, Fistful of Quarters, highlighted the two hottest Donkey Kong players in the world, the hero. Hero was Steve Weeb, and I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that name correctly, and the villain was Billy Mitchell. In a story that would have Hollywood scratching their heads, the big mulleted villain won out, posting the highest score ever on the classic early 1980s Nintendo arcade machine.
But doing so in a way that was even questionable. Anyone that
at
saw the King of Kong,
yes,
he was allowed to do what no one else was allowed to do in the way he submitted his highest,
yep,
score. And basically... Sorry to jump in there, but
no, don't
from what they've found is the way that the game in his video performed is something that can only happen in a newer game board, which basically is against the rule
against
of
the rules.
What the high score was. And so once that was found, he got wiped out. But he was also the highest of, I believe, Centipede and maybe two other
all
games.
Right.
and he's been completely stripped of everything.
Yeah. Oh, of all the titles. Okay.
Which I don't know if you guys have seen The King of Kong, but
yes.
He is portrayed as such a dick face that hearing this news was fantastic news. They even got in touch with Steve, the guy who... He's basically the guy that's trying to beat it for the whole film.
Yeah.
They got in touch with him. And since then, he's got a higher score on something else and got in the world record books. But he's happy with just that. And he's like,
I'm done.
Do not care. I did then. Yeah. I don't now.
Yeah.
And Billy Mitchell was an amazing real-life character. I don't know how much of it was just the portrayal of the filmmakers. But me and my kids, big fans of the show, The Regular Show, and they actually introduced a bad guy that was called the Big Giant Head, and it was just Billy Mitchell's head that always cheated at video games, and I loved that element.
Well, wasn't it in Pixels that they depicted the character?
Yeah, Peter Dinklage's character. Peter Dinklage. Fire Blaster.
Yeah, and he cheated, and that's...
Basically, it was kind of a...
So it was sort of widely known that he was a cheater. They just need to prove that he was...
It's amazing it's taken this long, because that documentary was from how long ago now?
Maybe 2007.
2007.
Wow.
Yeah.
I really recommend it to you because it's nothing Netflix. Like okay. seeing...
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I reckon it was.
Yeah.
Nothing like seeing a massive dick face. Like, this guy is such a dick.
Mm. And then knowing at the end of it all, he goes down.
The thing is, it's not a fictional story. So, yeah. Like, it's just like, wow, this guy is portrayed like a modern-day villain.
Yeah. Guy that basically was neglecting his family. And,
Yeah.
Wow.
Cool. All right.
Suck it, Billy.
Moving on to movie and TV news.
Yes, there's been some bit of talk in the last few days about a Mask movie. And no, not the Jim Carrey one. This is Mobile Armored Strike Command, with a K, because that's cool. Also with a K. Supposedly, this is to be directed by Gary Gray. Oh, man, that looks like Gary, if you read it quickly.
Yeah.
Who did one of the more recent Fast and the Furious movies.
Oh, sick.
So you sort of go, do you know what? Like...
It's good that they're trusting 7-year-olds to make Mask movies.
There was something else I saw that he did where I just went, oh, I prefer that style of film and not a Fast and the Furious movie. But when you're talking about a property that revolves around a lot of cars that sort of, you know, have guns pop out of them and stuff, and some high-tech masks, as the name suggests, maybe he's the right person. At this point, there's no script. He's been attached to direct, so they're in the process of looking for a script writer. Who knows how far this will get, or if this is another sort of Master of the Universe movie type situation where it lives in limbo for production hell. But we'll find out. I'm looking forward to see how they explain, you know, why Mask, you know, Command is spelled with a K sort of thing. So it'll be interesting how they write around that.
It will be. Sorry, I was just going to say, I know if Trent was here, he'd be telling us how excited he is, because I know that this film would really speak to
I think
it's
a big,
big
potential.
Yeah, it has. It lends itself to a film beautifully.
Yeah, and I think they can world build, you know, like if they can build some other toy lines and things.
Other
into
properties
this,
into
yeah,
it,
properties
for sure.
Anyway, moving on to other movie news. Master Universe has another in the long line of false starts and production hell, or a way forward. This time, Variety reports that Aaron and Adam Nee will direct a new He-Man and the Master Universe film. Escape artist Todd Black, Jason Blutman, and Steve Trish will produce with Devon Franklin. Looks like David S. Goyer is out of the picture. So, I mean, we're just throwing it out there because it's making, you know, news headlines on Facebook and the internet. But honestly, until there's some production
holding up birth certificates as well.
until I see a trailer, like, seriously, I can't get excited anymore.
Yep. Nah, I tend to agree with that.
So on to actual trailer news. Darren, tell us about Solo.
So the Solo film has trailer has dropped, and I thought it was looking pretty cool. I thought it was looking pretty special. I don't know what you guys think.
I got to see it before Ready Player One the other night when I was watching, and the one thing that stood out to me as hilarious, it showed Chewbacca in a situation of unescapable peril. Come on.
It's a prequel.
Who's watching that going, oh my God, does he survive? I did see like a satirical article, which I loved, which says, latest solo trailer lets fans know exactly why they're going to hate it. Which the way Star Wars universe with the toxic fandom is now happening.
Yeah.
This trailer won me over. I really was indifferent with the other two. This one kind of gave me a glimpse of enough. And I'm just hoping, as a massive fan of Donald Glover and of Woody Harrelson, I genuinely am pretty excited now.
Yeah, I think the casting is one of the strongest points, actually. I think Donald Glover is going to smash it as Lando.
Yeah, I think my wife has great concerns over, and I forget even the guy's name, the guy playing Han Solo.
Yes.
Because she just loves her some Harrison Ford. And she's like, you know, no, she goes, let's do the de-aging thing because he's the only one that could play it. And to your point, David, I was the same. I saw the first two trailers and went, okay. I saw this one and I went, do you know what? Him as an actor showed me enough there, enough of that, oh, look, it's fine. And then, oh, big scare sort of thing to make me go, do you know what? I'll buy that as a young Han Solo who thinks he's got all the answers and he really doesn't. It may
have been in the other trailers, but one thing that absolutely really tickled me this time was hearing Han Solo say, I've got a good feeling about this, because in every Star Wars movie, the fans have got a bad feeling about this.
Yeah.
So I only picked up on that this time. I think if moving forward, if Rogue One, if that can set the tone where they're going to do a prequel, they need to dial back the CGI characters to a degree. I think it's now a staple for the kids that go see it. They have to have the wisecracking robot droid, which is in there.
Yep.
But moving forward, I'm pretty... Is that Tilda Swinton maybe that voices the new wisecracking droid?
Yeah, I was trying to pick the voice. I actually thought it sounded like...
Sound like Maz from the...
Yeah, I actually thought it was Captain Phasma. That's who it sounded like to me. Yeah,
well, I thought... at first, I thought Kate Blanchett. And I'm like, she would not have time for that. So I thought maybe Tilda Swinton. Like someone...
Yeah, could be.
Someone of strong acting with like one of those ambiguous Australian/English accents. Yeah. Like, not sure.
Not a real accent. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I'm on board.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Fantastic Beasts 2, The Crimes of Grindelwald. I really don't care about this. I haven't actually even seen the trailer. I know it's dropped. I know there's a lot of Harry Potter fans out there. Can anyone else speak to this at all? No?
Yeah, I've seen half of the first.
In fairness, I think Trent put this in the notes and just so he could run away and leave us awkwardly talking about nothing for a bit. So
if you look at the notes, it's got then Deadpool.
Yeah, that's me. So I put my notes because there's also a great Deadpool 2 trailer that dropped just recently.
Final trailer.
Good, because I don't want to watch too much more because I feel they're going to ruin some of the best jokes. I felt like that, in fairness, going into Deadpool 1 and was pleasantly surprised there was a whole lot more in there. So I have a bit of faith in them. Showed off some more of the characters we're going to see, particularly a lot of Cable, some Domino stuff, which was great. And I think everyone's new favorite superhero is Peter.
Yep.
There'll be action figures. There'll be cosplays, everything. This guy is going to be massive.
As a guess... what I would give for the payoff of the joke to be that his parachute doesn't open in that film. That is what I, from a writing point of view, for a Deadpool film,
it works
for him to jump out and because like the iconic shot of him parachuting, for him to just not pull his chute and land similar to Hulk.
Pete's off the team.
Yeah, that's good. Excited to see Terry Crews in another big action thing because he's just delightful.
He is.
But no, Deadpool 2. Better be good because it is trumping that other one from Marvel. I can't remember what it's called because it's not that big a deal. Oh, but Marvel have got another film coming out.
I didn't know that.
But yeah, Deadpool 2 is where it's at, guys.
Cool. All right, moving back onto TV news. So Supernatural crossover with the Scooby-Doo gang in a standalone episode from their season 13 aired last month. Almost the entire episode was animated and was done quite well, even from a non-Scooby-Doo fan like myself. So,
Are you, by marriage, are you required to
positively paint? You know, My missus, she's like, oh, you know, you've got to watch Supernatural. I've watched it twice already. I'll sit down and watch it. Yeah. So we've
all 13 seasons.
I think we're up to season 11 or something back then. So we binge watched two episodes in a row. And after the second, I'm like, stop. I need to watch something else. I cannot keep watching this show. Like,
stop just, crying, Ben, and watch
it. It's just, I mean, you know, props to her for getting into something. But damn.
When I saw that this was happening, and this is me being a skeptic and a dick, as a friend of your wife on Facebook, I'm like, awesome, I'm not going to have to see it because she's going to let me know everything about it before it happens. So that's awesome.
I threw it in there because, like, you know, I would never talk about Supernatural on the show otherwise. I thought, you know, pretty cool being a crossover and doing something different. You know, like how many... Yeah, apparently every season Supernatural do something really vastly different.
Yeah.
And it was just cool to see the Scooby-Doo gang come, you know, like they used to do in the 90s where they versus Batman or team up with the Ninja Turtles or I don't know, some series, was it Kiss or someone?
Oh,
was
really? That sounds like something they would do.
So it's just cool that they, like, you know, in the episode, they're like, oh, you know, don't worry, it'll just be some guy in a mask or whatever. Yeah. But actually, there's people dying and they're bleeding and they're like, oh my God, is that real blood? Like, they just cannot handle
it. They broke the wall a bit. You know, there's a bit where the Scooby gang... I actually happen to see it. My wife is not quite as obsessive as yours over the show, but she still watches it. And it came on and, you know, it was literally Dean was sitting there going, oh, wait, I've seen this episode. It'll be this guy and we're about to find this guy dead. And then, of course, it breaks that and you see, you know, Freddy going from being calm and in control to, oh my God, that guy's actually dead. No one dies in our show. Like, it was that very meta, very cool. It sounded like they had the original voice cast from the show. Like, the voices sounded, for the Scooby Gang, sounded really good.
I'm pretty sure Matthew Lillard from the Scooby-Doo film is still doing Shaggy because he did it for a long time after the live-action film.
They nailed it. Like, you know, even from a non-fan point of view, of either show, so.
Scooby-Doo's an old people cartoon that they just rerun between good stuff.
I've never liked it.
Like, I put it in the same bucket as the Flintstones.
This
was for someone, but not me.
I can get onto Flintstones because, it, you know, it's funny, dinosaurs, all that jazz, but just mystery people, they just never get anything done. Anyway.
I will say, on a more adult side of the internet, there's some pretty good Scooby-Doo stuff out there. Just letting you know.
Like I say, link. Anyway, Darren, TV news.
So the Shearer Netflix page has launched, and there's some very limited information about the series, in which Shearer is described as an orphan.
Isn't that accurate? Like, she gets sort of stolen away from her parents, and then is an orphan in... Etheria, isn't that what happens?
I guess from a certain point of view, it could be portrayed that way. I always thought an orphan was someone who had, quote unquote, lost their parents, as in
if your parents are in another world, planet, that's almost the same kind of thing. Oh, okay, but no artwork or anything to speak of on that.
Nothing launched yet. Okay, in that space, but certainly worth staying tuned for.
Yeah, do we have a release date for that one? Have they said?
I believe later this year. I don't know if there's a date.
Late 2018?
Yeah.
Ah, cool. There's also, sort of staying on Netflix, the new Lost in Space. I don't know if anyone here has caught it. I sort of tried to a little bit earlier today, actually. Nothing like the original, as far as obviously the original stuff was.
Are you saying it's not shit?
Pretty close, because my memories of the old stuff were not great.
Lost in Space is the Matt LeBlanc film in my mind.
Now that one,
Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
No, we don't talk about that one anymore. I think it's really going. And I probably only got about halfway through the first episode before I got distracted. Not due to the quality of the show, just life happened. And really, really solid acting. It reminds me very much in the vein of Star Trek Discovery, in that they've taken the core concept. They have changed. They've actually done a pretty brave thing where changing the gender of the major villain, who traditionally the Doctor was a male.
Sign of the times.
Yeah. So I think that's a pretty cool decision for them, a creative decision for them to make.
It worked for Ghostbusters, so.
I don't even know if I've seen the movie yet. I think I have.
Which one?
The Ghostbusters.
The Ghostbusters. I thought,
there's only two.
There's only ever two. Yeah, so we'll see what happens with Lost in Space. We might sort of touch back on that once, you know. I know.
We might talk about this once we've watched it.
Yeah, exactly. This was another Trent put it in the show notes here.
Good job.
Just leaving his legacy of awkward silence.
Just sabotage the show. Yeah. Here.
Sabotage. Yeah.
Next is Trent has picked My Little Pony as the spotlight line. Thanks, Trent.
Good work.
All right, wrap up the news on the book, Darren.
So, Mark Taylor, one of the creators of the vintage He-Man and the Masters of the Universe toy line, is set to release his first book. It will tell his account of the story of how He-Man was created. Taylor and his wife Rebecca, who is an accomplished artist herself and was responsible for many decades on toys, including Castle Grayskull, recently appeared on 125 of Fans of Power with Joe Amato and Tyler Baker, and shared many incredible stories about the creation of He-Man and the inner workings of Mattel in the early 80s. The book is also said to have a sneak peek of three original He-Man stories, various illustrations, and a cover by artist Axel Jimenez. I apologize profusely, Axel, if I pronounced your name incorrectly. I'm a huge fan of your art and certainly mean no disrespect.
Good work. All right. We're going to revisit our soapbox moments that we've sort of done over the last couple of weeks.
The soapbox.
Oh, goddammit.
If you've got something you want to get off your chest and let out, it's therapeutic.
It's kind of ridiculous that I can't do that.
Oh, my God. Kill me now. Like, it's just the worst.
It's insane.
And I love it.
This is basically a quick sort of monologue where we can vent any frustrations we're having about a particular subject. Other people in the room are generally speaking not allowed to interrupt. This is a solo part, and I think we've got one from Davey and one from Ben lined up, ready to go.
I'll jump in first if that's all right. Give Davey a bit of a flavour of what to expect and what to do and how to beat me. So my little 2-minute soapbox thing is I called it Cinema Soapbox, and just a heads up, this is around my session watching Ready Player One, and actually on next week's show we'll be doing a bit of a review session on Ready Player One, the film, so get hyped for that. But
get Ready Player.
So let me paint you a little bit of a picture of my experience watching Ready Player One. So as you guys, as some of you are aware, I'm a father of two. I have two girls, 6 and 4 years old. So a trip to the cinema with my wife or even my friends is always a special occasion. Not something I take for granted like I did in my teens or early 20s. Anyhow, in a recent movie date with my wife, I was privileged to see Ready Player One. A very cool film indeed that we really both enjoyed. However, the cinema was just over half full on a Saturday afternoon, and typically the back row was full of young teenagers. Now, I don't want to wish to generalise against youth, but on numerous times throughout the film, these groups of teenagers were rowdy, talked amongst themselves at an audio that myself, a good 3 rows in front of them, could hear, and constant laughs and snickers at inappropriate times given where the film was at. What does one do in this scenario? I have been known in the past to stand up and tell people to shut up mid-film. Like, honestly, I have.
Nice.
Whom are usually sitting close by. But in a large group that are 3 rows away, I felt a little bit helpless. A cinema experience should be an immersion of the film, with a few whispers here and there, if needed. With all the in-house options these days of Netflix, Blu-rays, and more free-to-air channels than ever before, I can't help but think there is a time to socialise and talk through a film, and there is a time to stay freaking quiet. I truly loved Ready Player One, but I can't help but feel I would have enjoyed it that much more without the background nuisance. Or am I simply getting too old? Am I becoming that kind of adult now?
Well, when you refer to them as youths, strike me as a little bit old. But no, look, I tend to agree. One of the worst cinematic experiences I had was for a movie that I still rate was Captain America: Civil War. I was really enjoying this movie, but then the cinema was packed because it was opening week or it hadn't been out very long. And this guy next to me, he spent his whole time either on the phone, which was sort of really in a dark room. The bright light next to me was really quite distracting. If he wasn't doing that, he was had the noisiest bag of chips you've ever heard. And he'd crumble, it was in his backpack, so he's like a uni student sort of thing. Scrunch, crunch, crunch. And he's rummaging around. I'm expecting him to come up with a fistful. He brings up a single bloody chip every single time. And I'm just, my hands are digging into the seat. And my wife's just like, calm down. And to the point where I sit there and go, I like the film, but I don't have good memories of watching it because of that experience, you know? And I tend to agree.
The boys on the Giant Size team up, they actually, when they do a cinema review of a movie, they actually talk about, before they go into the film, they actually talk about how their cinema experience was. And I just, you know, theirs was all fairly good and, you know, positive. But mine was just, you know, I mean, it's not very often that you have a bad experience, but that just left a sour taste in my mouth for an otherwise absolutely 9.5 out of 10 film. Honestly, it was, just frustrating. You know, as you said, you're digging your nails into the sides of this, just thinking, what can I do? I'm getting so angry.
Yeah.
And I feel helpless sitting here, you know, amongst other people in my row.
And yet, you know, in your situation, Ben, if you had stood up and said, "Oh, you know, shut it," they're just gonna, they'll start, you know, poking fun at you and just making it worse. Completely honest,
One time I did get up and I said to a group, "You know, shut the hell up, otherwise I'm gonna come over there," or something along those lines.
Yeah,
and they went dead quiet, and you could hear them whispering, you know, banter at each other.
Yeah,
and then at the end of the film, like the lights come on and stuff, and you actually see them, you know, face to face. You just give them this angry glare, and they're like cowardly. Don't look at, you know, don't look you in the eyes and things. Yeah. But you know, the more group of them, big-headed they feel.
More brazen,
you know,
they get.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry, David, what were you gonna?
That was on a completely different note. When my wife and I went and saw the Ant-Man film, we experienced the second weirdest thing we've ever experienced at the cinema, and that being that a guy sitting, it was like, we went, because same deal with having kids, like it's a bit of a luxury to get along, let alone both of us without the kids. Went to see Airman. It was like a Wednesday afternoon, some crazy viewing, like 4 o'clock. We were pretty much the only ones in the cinema, except another dude that came in with hot rotisserie chicken and sat and ate a full rotisserie chicken with his fingers. And it was to the point where, to my wife, I was ruining the film for her because I couldn't stop watching this guy eating. I didn't want some chicken, but I was just mind blown that he'd snuck a hot chicken in and he was just going to sit and eat it with his fingers. Like, I just don't know what planet the dude was from, but I'd really love to visit because I just couldn't get my head around.
I'm all for bringing your own snacks to the movie, but that's something else.
My wife wouldn't let me. I really wanted just to point out, you are eating a hot chicken at a cinema. But that's...
in the dark. Where are you wiping your hands?
So I was like, you know when you go to the movies, like particularly back in the day of the days of leather seats and stuff, and you'd get there and there'd be like, you know, like the hand, not anything disgusting, but you just get that slimy feel of a seat.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd never think that it was chicken grease. Oh, and quickly, the first thing that I ever had, the first worst thing was actually before the first time I saw Ready Player One, completely in an empty cinema with me and my wife and a dude sat next to me.
In an empty cinema.
And I just,
he could have had any other seat. And he's picked the one that had his seat.
It just really got me so defensive. And I was just like, mate, you got to move. And he did. But then I'm like, am I the bad guy in this story? Like, it was an empty cinema. And he sat next to the only two people. But it's the same thing as when you park in an empty car park and you come back and someone's right next to you in the still empty car park.
Was it allocated seating in that? No, nothing. Or he just chose to sit.
He just wanted a friend, man.
Yeah.
He shot him down.
Yeah, he just wanted
I've got
to,
nothing.
Yeah. Like, he just wanted to hang out with that you on date day.
I just spent the whole movie like coming in and out of the film because I was just like,
is he still there?
I'm just like, I don't know why. Like, was it just sometimes you just don't mentally think about what you're doing and you just do it? What was the go? Because
you were menstruating.
In my, yeah. In my mind, I was trying to think, I may have even, like, I'm so particular at cinemas. Like, you know, the boy thing where you got to leave a seat between, thing. I think I even was doing that with my wife. Like, I don't want anyone sitting with me when I'm getting my Spielberg on.
I'll give you my cinema rant just quickly.
Stay out of the splash zone.
And funnily enough, like Damien and Frank before me, my story is going to centre on a experience at a Marvel film, Iron Man 2. So Iron Man 2 is going for, you know, it's nearly finished. It's the final action sequence. And two children decide they're going to reenact the scene in front of the whole cinema as while happening. The movie's going.
Wow.
So they're like, one of them's pretending to be Iron Man, the other's pretending to be War Machine, and they're running up and down the aisles and in front of the screen and everything. It was so terrible that the staff at the cinema, I'm not going to name the cinema, were standing out at the end of the session ready to hand everyone complimentary tickets.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how full on. No one asked for it. It was like, they're just like, we're really sorry. We're aware of the situation. We've heard what's happened.
Wow.
Please come back.
I know what I'm making my children do it every
Davey's just got free movie tickets for life.
Why'd you bring these light up glow sticks, guys?
You'll
just
see.
Go with it.
All right. That's funny. Jump up on the soapbox.
Rightio. So, recently I had been buying some bootleg minifigures because I don't believe in paying what actual minifigures are worth. And a lot of the licenses that I want don't exist being the word that I was going for. So I decided to grab a heap of different minifigs. And I looked on eBay and I wasn't real sure because there's so many different companies that promise the same 8 or so, and then you read the reviews and it's like, I got two of the exact same character instead of 8 different ones. So I was getting quite skeptical, and then I went on, as you guys would know, there's quite a big sales presence now with the likes of Instagram and Facebook. So I looked on a couple different places, and I've noticed that, well, after conferring with a friend recently, I've noticed that there's a big trend, which I hope I'm not adding to by publicizing it right now. But there is a big trend of people setting up an online store, not actually having any inventory, charging you $5 more than a figure is worth or something. Like say you're buying a $2 minifigure, you know, that's nothing. They're charging you $7. Even then you're like, oh, that's, you know, it's cheaper than the real one. They are actually then going online, buying it through their own eBay and putting your address on the product. So essentially playing middleman and skimming money off the top, something that you could have got cheaper. And the person that did it to me several times, actually his little scheme came undone when he bought some actual stock for his store following me from the same place that he'd bought for me and put my thing down. And he didn't, with his PayPal, change his address. So shipping address. So I get sent this big bag of basically minifigs that were nothing to do with my order. Looked over, it was my address with his name on the two, along with an itemized price list on the back, which made me realize that he tripled the price from what I bought from him. But then I spoke to a friend of mine in Melbourne that sells enamel pins. That's her business. And she recently found out someone was selling her $13 pins for $40 on Instagram, pocketing the difference. And just whenever someone would put an order into his store, he would go to her online store
and
buy it and skim the thing. So I just really want to put a message out to anyone that does that I really think they should attempt to survive being on fire. That's my suggestion. Maybe do a bit of cosplay as a human torch using actual fire.
Yeah,
really want some method acting in the human torching.
Make me believe it. Yeah,
yeah, that's my soapbox.
Nice.
Thoughts?
It's an eye-opener because it's
are we going to start a business or should we stop recording before we do
it? It's disgusting to hear that that's what the, you know, the interwebs are being used for, like the social networking and thing. As you said, like Instagram and Facebook, like Instagram's probably the worst and to a certain extent.
Well, that was other forms, the initial step was finding it on Instagram.
Because your name, as Frank has said in the past, like your name's not associated to your alias, so to speak. You're, and
it's anonymous.
Well, one thing I have since learned, because, you know, buy beware. I was buying bootleg stuff, so a lot of it's on me.
Yeah.
Comes with the territory. But I have recently found out now that Facebook are cracking down on sales. So you have to be a business profile to actually have products tagged on your profile. So that's one way of saving yourself, because they then go through the stringent, all right, what's your mobile number? What's your, you know, they do
actual
the sign up thing. Whereas anyone can just get an Instagram. Like, you know, I have friends whose pets have Instagram because, you know, they have personality problems. But anyway, that's their thing.
That's next week's rant.
But yeah, that's something that I fell victim to. And it was only a big bag of Skeletors that arrived that I kept.
I was going to say, you kept them.
Good on you.
So if anyone wants to buy 13 Skeletor minifigs, give me
I'm sure you'll find a few people in this room that could be tempted.
Yeah.
Ben wants 14, though. I can't feel that.
Yeah, that's a pretty scary tactic. And it's, you know, as you said, buy beware was sort of when you got to know what to look out for. And, yeah, and I think did you follow up on it, David? Like report him or anything like that? Or
didn't, because he's almost prominent in a group that we all use quite often. And right. Stuff. So I'm waiting for more of a face-to-face threat kind of scenario than actually calling him out online.
Yeah, okay.
But the way I see it, he lost the inventory that I received. So, you know,
so that's balanced out.
Yeah.
That's a lot of... that's 13 angry customers now waiting for a character or something that potentially is...
I was selling for a small marker. Yeah.
A very interesting insight.
All right. Well, on that note, I think we're going to wrap this episode. Just a big shout out to our Patreons in...
Wait, sorry, Davey. Tell us where we can find you. Where the people around the net can find you. And
what are you up to? What are you up to these
Probably days? The best place is to head along to Dave's Video Graveyard on WoFM on Facebook. From there, we'll link out to everywhere else. You can check out the stuff I'm doing. But basically, do a live radio show every Monday night, Australian 8 o'clock Australian Standard Time, which streams worldwide. You can check that out. We just talk about movies and. Talk about how much I like watching Demolition Man every week.
And hopefully there's a podcast in the near future.
There definitely will be.
Yeah, sick. Looking forward to that.
Nice. If you want to Kickstarter it, guys.
just give me money for a show I haven't made yet. Yeah,
no, definitely. But that's it.
Thanks awesome. Heaps for, you know, taking the helm for Trent. Really appreciate you jumping on board tonight. Yeah, give us a hand. Thank you very much.
Anytime, guys.
Thank you, Davey.
Yeah. We'll call that a wrap here. Big shout out to our Patreons in Lux Toy Collector, Jose Gonzalez and Brett G's. Thanks for your support, guys. And I think we will call that a wrap.
Thank you, one and all, and until next time, good journey.
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/Toy Power Podcast, at Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram. Or have your say and email us, toypowerpodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.
We are a proud member of the Giant Size Team Up Network. Check out all the awesome shows on this awesome network full of okay people. Want to learn more? Go to GiantSizeTeamUp.com, where you can find us and a whole lot more awesome shows. Well, they're not more awesome than us, but... Yeah.